Welcome everyone to our next podcast. Today we are going to be talking about Feeling Your Feelings. This is one of a series of podcasts about the Alan Gordon Recovery Program. This is a multimedia program that Alan Gordon LCSW recently donated to the PPD TMS Peer Network, also known as the TMS Wiki. It consists of some text and some recordings, divided into something like 16 different sections. One of them is about feeling your feelings, and that's the one that we're going to be discussing today. In past sessions, past podcasts, we have discussed earlier sections of the program, and then we're skipping forward today because there have been some great conversations on our forum that were very much in line with this theme. I'm thinking of three threads in particular. The first is an old, wonderful thread that we have called The Importance of Exploring Childhood Feelings. That was started by Lori, and it's about three pages, maybe 60 posts long at this point, and it's kind of been a far-ranging discussion. Lori first explored her feelings, and so I can kind of get you up to speed on this thread if you want to join in on it later on. Lori first started talking about how she's made a lot of progress in exploring her childhood feelings. She originally thought of herself as having a very happy childhood, but then she was able to dig up a lot of stuff, which really helped her in her recovery from TMS and also in her personal growth. We had a number of other people talking about their experiences of addressing those childhood issues as well in the thread. We talked, then we came to a point which I find very interesting. Chicken Bone, a member of our forum named Chicken Bone, dropped by and started talking about how she used journaling and how she focused on the present as well as the past. So I think there's a classic question in TMS circles of how much do you focus on the past and how much do you focus on the present? The root of everything is in the past, so clearly you're going to need to focus on the past, and many people have unresolved emotions from the past. I was just reading a thread on the forum today where someone really has some rage left over from the past. But for many TMSers as well, there is a very heavy emphasis on the present, that they create their rage in the present and maintain their rage in the present. And so that's, or frustration or tension or whatever you want to call it, anxiety. So it's always an important question for any given individual, what is the contribution of the past versus what is the contribution of the present. Anyway, that was another wonderful part of that thread, but as the thread evolved, it started going into this theme of feeling your feelings. I thought I'll pass it on to the rest of our audience. If anyone wants to bring up a point about that thread, because that'll be one of the core things we talk about tonight. I want to note that Becca is sending out some links in the chat room right there. So if you're there, you can remind yourself of some of the things which are happening. And I'm also happy to note that Bruce MC, one of my co-hosts, I am happy and glad to see him on my screen and have him join us. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Thanks for...
forest for the trees. I can see you for the trees today.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
You, me. I think... one of the most important things that Alan Gordon points out is about feeling your feelings and how you go about doing that. And it's important in each one of those sessions he had. He notes it himself that he had the client, the TMS client, identify where they had the feeling in their body. I think sadness was in the stomach for one. And I can think of how this kind of metaphorical thinking extends. It's almost medieval. In fact, it is. It's like the old tradition. I've seen people with frozen shoulder, recurrent frozen shoulder, going to my friend, the acupuncturist, and he is a guy with a shoulder who is has a pathological need to help others. His brother, he's always moving for friends. He's always driving around the bay after a hard day's work doing favors. And then he's taken on the whole family business. And so it's,
wow.
There is a side of metaphorical truth that manifests in the symptomology and the location of the symptomology, and getting in touch with your feelings in the area that's hurting is hard. I have to do it by indirection. If the sciatic nerve is hurting on the left, I will focus on the right sciatic nerve and try and enter it that way instead of directly confronting it. I think that's a principle of symmetry, too. You can't attack it directly from the left, go into the right, since they're both connected in the brain. And you might be able to slip in that way because your defenses are so built up around those various areas that hurt. They're almost like psychosymbolic complexes develop there. And I think, I don't know, which of the, do you remember two of the other locations that Alan asked the client to feel their symptoms in, their feelings in?
I don't. I mean, I think of the gut as being the classic one. And when I feel my emotions, I'll often feel them in my face. I think I have a tendency to tense up my forehead or my gut. The gut is the big one for me. I get a knot in my stomach so quickly.
Well, I wonder, I just got finished reading either with Stuntman or, who's the other one that had the childhood feelings? I read whether, where I think Stuntman or someone else was saying that they felt that these feelings, these locations, had to do with different repressive postures. Yeah, it was Stuntman that was talking about
it
the ideal posture.
Yeah.
And that's where in childhood, someone has adopted a defensive posture with their body while they're being harassed in some kind of family context for whatever reason. And they continue this kind of modeling for the rest of their life, stuck in that kind of physical tenseness. And when you think about it, it's really tension that drives this whole thing. It is tension, myoneural syndrome. And
tension is huge.
Yeah, it is huge. It can cause back spasms, which in turn put pressure on things that hurt. And it can also change the biochemistry of the brain in such a way that it's sending pain messages to that location. And all it is just that you're tensed up. And that's part of this body posture thing that you've learned somewhere. Like you're being criticized in a family situation, in a pecking order of some kind, where you're lower down. And then you adopt a subservient posture and keep that tension going. It's a learned or acquired or programmed response. And it lasts with you. It's something
It's
that it's
kind of
really
like
hard.
with so much of TMS, like you learn these ways of interacting early on in your childhood, and then they stick with you for forever. And what I got from StockTrader is that from his post is that there's almost like a Pavlovian. Oh gosh, it's going to be hard for me not to talk about this.
Oh yeah, you
a
are.
classical conditioning. Where when you if you assume this position whenever you're feeling not powerful, then it will be natural for you whenever you take that position to feel disempowered. That sounds like he can get better by changing position. I want to go to
that reminds me of what Robert Sapolsky said about the what's it, orangutans he studies.
That sounds
in
right.
Kenya there. Well, his point is that less dominant males who cannot distinguish between danger at a distance, an alpha male at a distance, and an alpha male close up who could potentially hurt them. So they're always in this state of anxiety. And in response, they adopt they isolate themselves socially, and they submit. They're submissive. And, of course, they develop more diseases and don't live as long and get dementia earlier. So this location of emotions in different chakras or tight points, tension points, is... Oh, how shall I say? It's it's really hard to stop once you've been programmed that way, programmed to hurt in certain postures. I think it's part of the same process that gets you hurting when you're sitting, or hurting when you ride the hurdy bicycle.
Exactly, that conditioning thing. So I want to go a little bit to the chat room. We just had Panda Girl mention that she feels anxiety and fear in hips, glutes, and legs. That's interesting because I almost never feel it in the hips, glutes, or legs. And then StockTrader mentioned, feel your feelings means emotions first manifest as physical sensations. One must ask ourselves, what does this emotion feel like in my body? This is the language of emotions. By the way, does anyone want to jump in? I'll just do so right now. You can jump in whenever there's a pause. But I thought that I would build a little bit off of what StockTrader was saying and talk about my experience. Or my interpretation of that. So I recently, James Alexander stopped by the forum, and we had a really interesting discussion about a pain researcher who recently was feeling pain. And he quoted his position on this researcher's work, shared it on the forum. And I got to reading that chapter. It was talking a lot about the biology of pain. And going through it, it was interesting how he described the brain. And he described what I call the triune brain, which is dividing the brain into three levels, from less advanced to more advanced. There's the brain stem, which is literally just the top end of the spinal cord. Above that, but deep within the thing which we think of as our brain, in the middle of that is the paleomammalian brain. That's the emotional brain. That's the unconscious part of our bodies, of our brain, of our central nervous system, where emotions live, where emotions happen. If you go in and you zap that part of the brain, emotions will stop. You will be less emotional. You will lose an emotion or emotional behaviors.
Is for you, Forrest.
Oh, he's holding up the book. Bruce MC is. Also, for those who don't know, there we go. Yeah. They have some of us are. If you click on the link, then you can see both Bruce and I. We've got our webcams on, and Bruce is holding up the image from Dr. Alexander's book. But the third layer is what's called the neocortex for the new cortex. Cortex just means bark, so that means the surface of the brain. So you've got these three different layers of the brain. And consciousness lives in the neocortex. And emotions live in the unconscious paleomammalian brain, the older part. The brain stem is really old. That's sometimes called the reptilian brain. It handles balance and temperature regulation and boring stuff like that, which are below even emotions. So why do I bring all of this up? If emotions are in the paleomammalian brain, then we aren't conscious of them. You can think of an emotion, therefore, as a biological phenomena. Emotions, to some degree, are about hormones. One of the hormone cascades that happens is the stress response. And when you have the stress response, that divides into two halves. One of them is the very familiar autonomic nervous system, where that gets stimulated. And Dr. Sarno talks about the autonomic nervous system as the way that our blood vessels get constricted, and that and the oxygen is cut off to our muscles and nerves and tendons. And the other thing is the what's called the HPA axis. The part that matters there is the A in HPA. That's the adrenal glands that give us that jittery feeling and get us full of energy when we're feeling threatened. So anyway, you can think of emotions happening in this paleomammalian brain as biochemical events. And as those biochemical events, how do we know that they're happening if they're unconscious? We feel the effects of those biochemical events in our bodies. We feel the jitters. We feel the knot in our stomach as the body says, "Ooh, you're about to fight. We don't have time to digest food. You know, we need to divert all of the blood flow to our muscles." And therefore, you get this knot in your stomach. And that's literally what's happening when you are feeling your brain. Feeling your feelings in your body is you're getting in touch with those emotions. So anyway, I hope that was helpful. If people found that interesting, let's look at some of the comments. We had some people talking about So anyway, that's some thoughts about how all of this is biologically based and some of the science behind feeling your feelings. Someone talked about, Panda Girl talked about trauma release exercises. Joy hadn't heard about that, so Panda Girl mentioned it's a practice of evoking tremors, shaking in your muscles to release tension stored within the body. Animals do this in the wild after being chased or scared, but as humans, we don't allow ourselves to physically shake. So that was an interesting idea. I mean, if we've got all these emotions locked up in the body, how do we get rid of them? There's a great video on YouTube where they show a polar bear running across the tundra, and it's being chased by someone in a helicopter. Because the people in the helicopter want to tag it, and they shoot it with a tranquilizer dart. This bear is freaking out. I mean, it's terrified. It's running for its life from this gigantic, very, very noisy helicopter. But it collapses on the ground. It can't move. It's got all this energy stored in its body. They do whatever they have to do. They tag it, and then the tranquilizer wears off, and you can see the whole bear's body going into convulsions, to these tremors, like Panda Girl was describing in the trauma release exercises. So that's kind of an example of the freeze response. How the bear wasn't able to fight, it wasn't able to flee. All it could do was freeze because it was being tranquilized, and then it had to discharge that energy somehow, and it did that by the shaking. Pindagirl, I'd be curious if you want to unmute yourself or maybe just say it in the chat. Have you tried this? Has it worked for you, the trauma release exercises?
Yeah, I have actually. I got onto it after reading Peter Levine's Waking the Tiger book.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And then somebody along those same lines, I think his name is David, Dr. David Burchelli, has a couple of books.
I think that's his first case in Waking the Tiger, where he has that one lady go back to a memory and then just act out, release the repressed emotions in her, what do you say, mammalian mind?
He in that case, he could specifically get the girl to remember. Like, I have trauma stored that I can't put a finger on. And it's one of those things that frustrates me that, like, I journal. I don't know what it is. And I really don't. I really think at the heart of mine, after talking to Alan Gordon, that I don't have some repressed, deep, dark secret or something scary in my past that I'm not allowing myself to remember. I think it's just a lot of, he talked about this, 34 years of PTSD and growing up in a traumatic childhood, just years and years of that, being and then having to be strong and push on and push past that and not feel it and just keep on, hold it together. And hold it together means a lot to me because that's what I feel like I have to do all the time.
It doesn't sound like it takes much at a very early age to adopt one of these defensive postures, these dysfunctional emotional coping styles, and then have it perpetuate itself. It doesn't seem like you need to have one major trauma. It could be conditioned behavior over a long period of time in a familial context.
Oh,
a social context,
too.
Even like for being bullied at school or something.
It became my way of survival. I couldn't. If I got emotional, then my mother was volatile. So if I got emotional, my mother was volatile. So I just had to hold it all in. And I think just for 30 years, I've just held tension. But the idea behind these, they're called neurogenic tremors, and it's what animals do. To shake out all that tension after they've been chased, they'll go and shake for hours and let that adrenaline and that tension leave the muscles, and that's a natural thing that happens.
I can actually remember a case where I had that kind of response, and I was involved in an auto wreck going up over Sonora Pass, and these kids had stolen their mother's car. And we're driving it without any insurance, and they were going slow and signaling right, and I accelerated to go around them, and they turned back left into me to make a U-turn and drove my car into the ditch on the opposite side of the road, bent my fender, and I got the relevant information, and seemed to be okay. There wasn't anything broken, or it was a pretty good impact on the wheel side and the fender, but I could bend it out and the car would go on. And I turned around and elected to go back home, and I drove a little while and said, well, I'm feeling kind of funny, like am I going to pass out or something? So I stopped and then went down by a creek, and I said, I'll just sit here for a few minutes. And then it started, the shaking.
Really?
I felt ice cold, and I started shaking all over, moving progressively through all of my muscle structure. And I said, well, I better just sit here for a while. And finally, when it passed, and I could stand up and walk around, not passing out or anything. I said, well, I guess I'm fit to drive. But I remember very specifically shaking out the trauma of that traffic, of the impact of that traffic accident. Because I was going 60 when they came into me at 45. It must have been a pretty good jolt.
Wow.
But I remember specifically going into shock, getting that cold, icy feeling, and then shaking. And when the shaking was done, I was done. I was okay. Get in the car and drive on. It seemed like it released whatever I had assimilated. Or way I don't know, the fight, flight, freeze response.
Exactly, yeah.
So the idea behind that is that's what's supposed to happen when we go through trauma. But like
yeah.
In today's age, you know, I think people would understand if you go through a car accident or near car accident and then you are afraid and shake like that. But if your boss is yelling at you or you're going through like what we think is just normal stress, even though it can be traumatic, if somebody in your office is trembling in the corner, you're going to look at them and go, well, maybe not us because it's GMS people, we kind of understand. But, you know, people are going to look at you and society is going to look at you and go, what is wrong with that person? They can't hold this together. And so we hold it, we tense it, we repress it, and we don't ever allow it to dissipate through those shaking tremors. So,
yeah,
you know, these neurogenic tremors is a way to evoke it. By you don't necessarily have to go into the emotion, but you can physically evoke by doing certain exercises. You can evoke your muscles to start shaking and let these things happen. And the reason why I got interested in this is because when I was pregnant, I would lay on the floor because my back was so sore. I would lay on the floor and I had my knees in a certain position, and my leg would shake uncontrollably. And I remember thinking, looking at my husband going, there's something wrong with me. Like, that's not normal. That's not a normal thing to do. But I never could figure out what it was. And, you know, I had a chiropractor, doctor, everything look at me. And they just were like, oh, you know. And now I know it's total symptom. And it's a strange thing for it to shake and be so uncontrollable. But now I know if I lay down on the floor and I let my legs shake like that in a couple minutes, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I feel that release. But, you know,
really?
Yeah, and it's a cumulative thing. Like, you have to do it repeatedly until you don't, like, the first time I did it, I shook violently. Second time I did it, not so much. Third time, it kind of lets that stuff dissipate, that energy dissipate, where it's held.
Does Peter Levine in the new edition of Waking the Tiger have a CD that describes some of these exercises?
These neurogenic tremor exercises, I don't believe are Peter Levine's, but David Bercelli is the name of it.
Bercelli, correct? David Bercelli?
Bercelli? Bercelli.
Okay.
I'll find a link to it, but he's got DVDs. I have his book, but he has some DVDs as well. There's some YouTube videos, but I don't think the YouTube videos actually go into the how-to, but they show how it's been used in different scenarios. But, yeah, because they're in the book, and I do believe there's a DVD of that.
Joy in the chat room had what I thought was a very poetic response. The sorrow which has no vent in tears may make other organs weep. Just kind of building on that idea of finding ways to express our emotions and these traumas which are inside of us. If we have to freeze and we want to fight, but society doesn't allow us to do that, or just reality doesn't allow us to do that. Freud called this the reality principle. Then we have to freeze instead, and the tension goes inside. It gets cast into the shadows, as Steve Ozanich might have said. Very interesting. So have you found it helpful, Panda Girl, to do this?
I have. I've been able to sleep a little bit better. I don't have as much pain in my legs. Like I said, that's where I feel my fear and anxiety and all of my muscle tension. It's in my low back and hips and thighs. And so the shaking, that's where I shake my face. And yep. That's where the fight or flight, the fight or flight center of the body, and that's where a lot of the sympathetic nerve systems rely. And so that puts us in a fetal position if we need to hide.
Did you say in the legs or where? I missed that.
Yeah, the psoas muscles, which are your connect your pelvis to your legs.
Gotcha.
In that area. And so that's what makes you curl up into a ball when you need to protect yourself and protect your organs. So it's interesting because I have found it helpful. I have restless legs, and when I try to sleep at night, my legs just feel like they're jittery. And doing this before I go to bed.
Save me.
It sounds like someone wants some attention.
Save me.
That's cute.
It's interesting how in classical Chinese acupuncture, different areas of the body are assigned to different organs, which are given different emotions. And I can think of where I felt shaking is when the acupuncturist needles a trigger point that connects with an area of the brain. It accesses your pure animal nature, like when he's working on your heart through the back. And there must be some kind of hard-earned wisdom there in the Chinese system from years and years. But you feel very much like when he's working at a certain point, there's an area of your brain that you enter into that is part of that mammalian brain. And you'll yelp and you'll make guttural sounds very much like an animal, pre-vocalic, alpha, beta, pre-verbal kind of consciousness. But you're still there. It's really funny. And there are different emotions associated with the different areas that he will access through those meridians, which I guess conform to the neural pathways in conventional Western medicine. That's where I can think of some shaking going on. Because when he works on my foot, down at the bottom, there's some acupressure points inside the foot. When he presses on that, then I'll be flipping on the table and I'll make these involuntary sounds as if, my animal nature is being messed with, almost like I'm in a cage. And it's way beneath the conscious level. Well, if anything, whether it works or not, it does teach you about the existence of the unconscious, in a very palpable way.
Yeah. I love your acupuncturist, by the way. I don't think you've told the acupuncturist story for a while, but you have a wise acupuncturist, correct?
He's into Chinese philosophy, and he's also a Eskimo. He's a native Alaskan, and he's in both worlds. He's half Aleut, and he was in. He was, initiated into their mysteries. And so he connects the Chinese with the native Eskimo or Aleut, Native American Alaskans. He's been to New Zealand and studied with the Maoris. So
wow.
He's got a lot of things going on. He's been doing it for 30 years. He's got a Stanford degree, too. He's
no kidding.
Not stupid.
Stock trader just asked if you were related to Bill Gates. Didn't he say something about TMS, though? He said something to you about TMS, which I thought, or am I making this up? Did he mention something about TMS or say that you're fine? He said, don't worry about it. Your back is totally fine. Your back is healthy.
Oh, well, what he said was that the great moment of revelation comes for his patients where they realize it's emotional.
There you go. Okay.
They've been thinking they'll get needled and then it'll somehow fix something physically that's wrong, but he can't tell them. They have to come to that realization themselves that it's really about emotions. And that's what's driving this whole thing, driving their pain. But they don't want that at first. They want to be needled and then anesthetized and then blocking the pain messages. And then they want to get a fix. But once they start to connect their mindfulness, once they start to become mindful with the tool of the acupuncture, needles, that then they start to get the idea that, oh, there are these parts of my brain that are connected with the parts of my body, and there's no difference between body and mind. It's something emotional I'm doing, and there's a work to be done. He was saying the other day, well, you've progressed so far. You've gone into the past and so on. Now it's just time to go out and live it.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, like he's watching.
Yeah.
But
So anyway, at that point, you still need acupuncture?
Do you need it? There must come a time when you are into this Zen thing. You don't need the help anymore. It must be you get so much control, like a yogi, that you've made these connections. It's like a tool, like a helper.
Gotcha. Yeah. Kind of like a crutch.
Well,
it's interesting.
It's interesting what Alan Gordon says, too, that people think that they need to find out what their emotion is, but that's not the problem. They need to find out how to feel what that emotion is, and that's the problem, the fact they can't feel their emotions. I guess that's the problem with repression.
I see. So the idea is that you don't have to do the psychoarchaeology. You don't have to understand it. To use the metaphor that I was using before of the triune brain, you don't have to understand it in the neocortex, the logical conscious part of your brain. You just have to be able to feel it and connect to it in those older parts of the brain. And once you do that, then you're no longer repressing.
Yeah, you've got in touch with your thinking body, haven't you?
Hmm.
You
that
no
relates,
longer have your emotions out there. They're accessible.
That relates a little bit to another one of the threads which came up today, session is about. It was a thread about, I think it was called The Right Way of Focusing. And so we've talked about various body-centered psychotherapies. We talked about Bracelli's Revolutionary Trauma Release Program. There, you're kind of expressing something using the body. With focusing, I think the information goes the other way. There, you're learning about yourself through your body. It's much like what I was describing earlier when I said that you can figure out what your emotions are by feeling them in your body, or what Alan was talking about when he says feeling your feelings in the body. The person who discovered this is named Eugene Genlin, Dr. Eugene Genlin. He was at the University of Chicago. And he was studying what made some psychotherapies work and other psychotherapies not work. And he found, by his account, that it was fairly simple. It was a question of whether or not people could listen to themselves. And I think this is intuitively attractive to me, this notion that whether you succeed in psychotherapy or whether you fail in psychotherapy has to do with, do you know what you're feeling? Can you listen to your feeling and connect with that and be in touch with that? Joy just sent me a nice little comment in the, thank you, Joy.
You're welcome.
in the chat room. And it's kind of like what I guess your acupuncturist was talking about with you, Bruce, where you were getting to the point where you were able to connect, where you didn't need his crutch anymore. You've been able to explore the past, connect with the past, and now you're really living it.
Well, really doing it, you know, living in that deeper level, being aware of your emotions in your body, not being cut off from them. I can see where a lot of times you adopt different postures and tense yourself in different situations, and that must go way, way back in your learning curve. You must learn those kind of postures when you're 5 or 6, already taking them on maybe when you're 4, 3 or 4, and then just they build, and the rigidity is there. And the tension
Indeed.
Lasts a whole lifetime.
So Gendlin's approach for beating this is it has 6 steps, and it's called focusing. You can read the thread. And the first step is you just need to set aside a time. Now, you're going to have lots of different things going on in your mind at any given time. You may be stressed about your job. You may be stressed about child rearing. You may be stressed about, you know, any manifold things in either of those places. You could be stressing out, but you need to just kind of clear some mental space, ask those things to step aside, and let you focus on one thing that you want to work on for a moment. So that's step one. Step two is when you identify a specific feeling in your body and you try to connect with that feeling. You try to get some sort of you try to identify a specific feeling that you want to explore. So for Panda Girl, it might be that she's feeling something in her legs and she wants to understand that. So she identifies that. She doesn't get involved in it. She doesn't go too deep inside of it. You just want to have an unclear sense of that thing that you're trying to work on. But the next step is, of course, to clarify. After that, you want to get some sort of handle on it. A handle is basically a word. And you try to say, okay, as I'm dealing with this, I'm feeling scared. This tremor or this tightness that I'm feeling in my legs it's a fear. It's an old fear, and I want to understand it. Where is it coming from in the present? What's making me feel this way? And so you come up with a word, but trying to listen to your body is difficult, and you don't always get the right thing. So when I've tried this, it's called focusing, is the name of this skill that we're describing the 6 steps of. When you try to focus, you don't always get the right word, so then you have to test it. You take the word, the handle, and then you try to connect that with the felt sensation, and you just ask the felt sensation, is this fear? You know, you listen to your body to verify. And if yes, then you go on to the next step. If not, then you have to come up with a new handle for it. But we'll suppose that you go through this process a couple times and you find the sensation that you want. Then you can go and you can ask it for the next step. You can say, hey, what makes this so scary? You know, what is it about this scariness that I'm feeling in my hips that is so scary? And you don't want to do this with your brain, because all of these body-centered therapies, they're all about using your body, using the wisdom in your body, recognizing that your body is in some sense your unconscious mind, and just asking for what it's ready to tell you at this moment. So you ask it that, and eventually it may give you something. And when you do this, you just receive that. If you'd like, you can repeat the process. Whatever it gives you, you can choose to work on that, find that in your body, find a handle, resonate on that, ask if it has something additional until you feel like you've gotten to the root of it and you're ready to be done. Once you've been done doing it a little while, from what I hear, you can go through the steps quite quickly. But it should never take more than a half an hour, even if you you go through, or it doesn't need to take more than a half an hour, even if you go through the steps multiple times. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting and thought-provoking idea, like someone made a roadmap for feeling our feelings. This is a way that we can not just feel our feelings, but dialogue with those feelings and learn from them.
Forrest, I have a question.
Shoot.
Is it necessary to make peace with the past for the pain to go away?
So this is, I think it depends on the person. For many, many people in Dr. Sarno's process, practice, about 80%, 75 to 80%, were able to take a purely psychoeducational approach. And those people are doing some journaling, they're doing some thinking, they're writing their lists and their essays. So perhaps some of them are making peace with the past via that process. But some of them are just reading the book. And we know from the online community that a lot of people have gotten better just by reading and rereading the books. For them,
by acknowledging and understanding and being aware.
Yes, but it's just reading the books, and maybe they're doing a little bit of journaling as well. But it seems to me that for a lot of people, acceptance is enough, and that's kind of the key here, is that everyone is different. But Stock Trader is chiming in the chat room, and he says forgiveness is part of the healing, and I think he's very wise to say that. I mean, I guess it just depends on different people. Different people, this is what I love about the online community, is everybody has a different approach. So what works for me is going to be different for you. And, you know, what works for Bruce is going to be different than what works for Stock Trader. What's your take on that, Bruce?
Yes, but feeling compassion for your inner child is one of the, what is it, four pillars of wisdom in Alan Gordon's system. He doesn't leave any of them out. It isn't like you can do one without doing the others, I don't think. But if these emotions are located in various parts of the body, tension, then does this explain why TMS locates the pain in areas that apply to activities that your self-esteem is implicated in? I know a conductor who developed tendonitis in his elbows, so he couldn't play any of the instruments in the band. So it effectively neutralized his identity, or a runner who will develop sciatica or what is that, piriformis syndrome, that keeps them from doing what they want, what is at the core of their personality.
Or a programmer who can't type.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my story.
That's another, like an accountant. I noticed all the accountants in a place that was going broke I worked at. All were going around with the wrist braces, and it got worse and worse the less money there was, and they became more and more depressed and had worse carpal tunnel syndrome, till the whole accounting department seemed to be filled with these basket cases or hand cases. Which is interesting because I was reading on in the forum about something called, what is it, meta-medicine, one of the strings. And it's interesting how much of its analysis of pain, meta-medicine's analysis, correlates with classical Sarno. But one of their points is that every episode of chronic pain begins with an event that involves a lessening of self-esteem. When you think about a death in the family, what does it do? It's one of your core relationships from childhood, like the death of a father or a mother. And then that calls your identity into question. It's like somebody gave you a good swift kick, you know where. And you've lost some of your vis, your native power, your one of the building blocks. And that's often a trigger event followed by fibromyalgia or back pain or what have you, any one of the symptoms. It messes with your fundamental personality and your sense of self-esteem. It's lessened some way.
So these deep traumas change us and bring on the illness? Yeah. I really wanted to go back to what Joy asked, because I realize there's maybe another thing. I think that it depends on the intensity of what you're dealing with. And if you've been through a lot, then I think that the best way to think of it is as a process. That you have to go through the process, that there aren't any steps that you can skip. You've got to get angry. You've got to tap into that rage. You've got to connect with it. You've got to somehow work it out of your system. Panda Girl earlier in the call was talking about the Berselli Revolutionary Trauma Release Program. That's the name of his book, is why I keep on saying revolutionary. But, this was a system which is working for her to take those emotions and get them out of the system.
But in order for pain to disappear, there has to be a reduction in internal anger, right?
I've heard of people who have been able to get rid of the pain without that, but if you don't actually solve the tension down below, then I'm going to look for the symptom imperative. I'm going to say it's going to come back and get you eventually anyway. So I think that you probably can't avoid. I mean, I'm not going to say it can't happen. Where would I get that data? To really fix it, yeah, I think you've got to go through the process, and it's going to be painful.
You know, I was always taught to magnify the good, and I only started with therapy a few weeks ago. And I was always taught, like, let go of disappointments and setbacks, and now in therapy, it's just the opposite. Now I'm, like, dwelling on all the negative and the toxic stuff, and so I'm a little bit confused. You know, because people would say, oh, it's unhealthy to think about that unresolved conflict and be positive and move forward. But in therapy, it's the complete opposite and so kind of mixed up.
I think that
maybe the problem was that you weren't letting go.
Yes, right. I was dwelling on it.
You were holding on and repressing. They tell you to let go, but...
I think that there's a real balance. I think so much of this is about balance, where you have to...
in other words, let go of the bitterness, the resentment, the self-pity.
I think it's complicated, and I would work that out, the details of that, with your therapist. I think that there, you know, for every Let's see, for everything there is a season. I think that there is a season for rage. There is a season for bitterness, and there is a season for being compassionate towards yourself. There's a season maybe even for feeling sorry for yourself. You don't want that season to go on forever. You're probably going to want to move on from that season before you're done, because I think there's some wisdom to the messages that that you were told as a child. But it might be that the reason that it all accumulates is because you couldn't experience it before, that you were taught and you were told that to some degree your emotional experience wasn't okay, that you weren't allowed to have that emotional experience, that rage and that pain.
Exactly. You're saying like there's a proper time, or the word you used was season, but you cannot allow a season to turn into a lifetime of sadness and mourning and anger. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, well, I don't claim to be an expert on that. It's just something that I've been thinking about a tremendous amount recently is how much something I talked about at the beginning of the call is, you know, how much do we focus on the past and how much do we focus on the present? How much do you go back and you feel those old emotions, and how much do you let those emotions go away? Bruce said something which, you know, made me think a lot recently. He was talking about his process recently of going through some of the exercises in Howard Schubiner's book, Unlearn Your Pain. And he talked about how it gets him really angry and it gets him jazzed up and hyped up. And then he has to take some time to let that go. And part of me says, you know, do you need to re-traumatize yourself? But he says that no, each time he does it, he gets a little bit better. He gets a little bit of better of reassuring. And I think maybe that discharge, my gut as you're saying that is to say, I bet that there's a lot that needs to be discharged, especially if that's the way that a very talented therapist is pointing you. That would be my take.
Can I chime in on that?
Please.
Yeah, so I've struggled with this whole journaling and negativity, and I feel like I'm re-traumatizing myself when I have to go through this junk again. But I know at some point I've got to process it, because I haven't before, because I've just repressed it, because I felt like if I didn't repress it and move on, then I was just going to have a pity party for myself, and that was not a way to be a productive and positive member of society. But what I decided to do is I journal in the morning about the negative stuff, and I just get it out and think through those things. I used to try to do that at night before I would go to bed, and I wouldn't be able to sleep, and I would just I would have nightmares and dreams and whatnot. So what I do now is I journal my negative and past stuff in the morning, and then before I go to bed, I have a journal of gratitude, and I dwell on the things that are positive in my life and the things that I'm thankful for, and you know, just that all the things that I'm grateful for in my life, and it lets me end my day and go off into my sleep and restful period on a much happier note. Then I don't end up having, you know, nightmares and feel like I haven't rested. But it gives me a way to journal both of those things, because I think they're both important. But one of them was not, you know, journaling at night about past hurts was not allowing me to rest at night.
Very, very perceptive. Anyone else want to weigh in on that, perhaps in the chat room? Joy typed in, accept the unacceptable. But I do feel like if you look at the Schubiner process, that what happens in ISTDP is first you go into the rage and then you can find the compassion. But you can't get to the compassion until you get to the rage. And in my experience, when it comes to therapy, the absolute most important thing is honesty and openness and just a willingness to engage those emotions. And so I think that the first step is engaging those emotions, and it'll be scary, But I think that digging deep is, I think digging deep is what's going to get you out of it. Is my hunch.
Thank you.
It depends so much on the person. I do, but yeah, I think digging deep and exploring some of those things could work well.
I can see how what Alan says is so important in all this. The problem is not knowing what your feelings are or finding them. It's feeling the feelings that are there. It's that ability to be able to take rage and feel it thoroughly and process it through all of its ramifications, through on to guilt, and finally to compassion for yourself, transforming that, because it's so easy to just keep replaying the trauma again and again and reprogramming those neural pathways. But if you want to really find an alternative, you have to change the feeling itself by experiencing it thoroughly. And that's what I think Alan Gordon is saying. The problem is not looking for the feelings or questing after them. It's actually feeling them, being able to feel them. And that's the problem. That's why they're located, isolated in the body from you in various trigger points and so on. It's because you haven't really felt them
mm-hmm.
on a visceral gut level, like that shaking.
I guess one more thing, Joy, is I guess we're all, this is a peer-run organization. And to be honest, I think that when you deal with therapists have such very different approaches that I think that there's also some wisdom to trusting yourself and trusting what works for you. What makes sense for you. I think perhaps this might have been the thinking of Carl Rogers, the idea that you have inside of you what it takes to heal, and so you are essentially a scientist, and your job is to do experiments and figure out what it is that brings you peace, and recognize that this you know, is a process which you'll be working on for a while, and you don't have to do everything the same at different points, so you want to pace it at the pace that you're ready to handle.
Thank you.
Sure.
Then, Forrest, do you think that the time necessary to work Alan Gordon's program will change, be highly variable from TMS patient to TMS patient?
Oh, I'm sure of it. Yes.
I'm sure of it. It sounds to me like that whole process that he outlines in the recovery program, along with the listening and assimilating the different sessions, could take you quite a while. If you were resistant to it, you'd have to come back to it quite a few times to really work it through to a successful completion or a sense of an ending, achieve a sense of an ending with it.
Well, and did you notice, I mean, there was one thing where he was talking about how he was doing it. You know, that this is, Matthew has this great quote, Matthew N.J. has this great quote where he says, you know, it takes, he's quoting Dr. Bob Evans, another Sarno psychologist, it takes approximately one lifetime to figure it out. And I think it'll, you know, it's like TMS treatment in general, that you just keep applying it. It's a process, something you do for a long time. So I'm going to kind of, Bruce, would you mind taking the floor for a little bit? We have a caller in Fuse who I don't think has gotten through. Has Tennis Tom gotten through yet?
Hey, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yes,
I
indeed.
Welcome.
Jeez. Hi, howdy. I'm, my pain has lessened. I figured out how to do this. So I've been listening and let Bruce talk. Hopefully he'll give me a couple of good stock tips and I'll feel a lot better next week.
Well, none of us is an expert in this. We're all doing what you're doing.
Well, Tennis Tom has been through it for many, many years. He has about 3,600 posts under his belt, and he's beat quite a bit of TMS. You're a runner, right? And you play tennis,
of
course, legendarily.
Yeah, I run in the pool. I just came out of the pool. I ran 30 minutes in the pool, a little backstroke, and hurried up here, took a shower, and been listening intently.
Excellent. Good to hear. Well, we're just...
It sounds like you could have some pointers to us based on your level of experience.
Indeed. Very glad.
Thank you. Hey, I have a question for Alan. Do people who've had lobotomies suffer from TMS?
That's a good question. Alan is not on the line today. Gosh, I wonder if they do.
Okay. Yeah, when he comes back, another one about Reiki and therapy. I was wondering if Reiki and therapy would be helpful to TMSers to help dissipate their excess tension.
Oh, my goodness. We will have to ask that. Like I said, he's not on the line tonight. But,
oh, okay.
he is, but we can ask him. Tell us about Reiki and therapy. I'm not actually familiar with that.
Oh, you go basically, you go to a Reiki and shrink's office, and I think you go into a padded cell or something, and you get a baseball bat and beat a mattress. I think that's basically...
pretty hardcore.
Yeah, getting rid of your tension by beating a mattress with a baseball bat, I think.
Right.
I've never had it, but it sounds good.
It sounds like Andy Warhol read that. Is that where he got it? He got those happenings?
I don't know, but he was an interesting guy. I read about his biography in Rolling Stone or something. But pardon me if I got confused who was speaking tonight, because I got to the meeting late, and I saw it said something about Alan, but I think it's been Bruce has been speaking. And am I correct? Or?
Bruce and Forrest.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Save those questions for Alan next time. But it's been cool. I feel a lot better. I raised the flag. My pain is lessened. It worked. You saw me. I saw you. Said, "Hiya, Tom." I said, "God, I'm doing this right." And, you know, one thing I think about how to feel better with your pain is what Dr. Sarno recommends is, and what Steve-O recommends is get a good distraction that you enjoy better than your pain distraction.
Exactly. Someone was quoting, I think it was Doc Trader, who was in touch with Steve-O and said, one of my favorite posts ever, he said, happiness first, healing will follow, which I think is, because I think that's what TMS is about, is it's TMS closes down your life. It's supposed to be a big distraction, and so you just have to send the message to it, hey, actually, no, I'm going to enjoy my life. I thought it was brilliant.
Yes, yes. Well, from one of my readings of it is, get the TMS knowledge penicillin, then sleep on it. And according to Steve, I believe, or Dr. Sarna too, then it will fade away. It's like... when a pain goes away, you don't all of a sudden, oh, you know, God, it's gone. I didn't think about it, but because you're on to the next one, you know. So I think something about we don't have enough time in the day for appreciation and thankfulness for the good things we have to appreciate the pains that are gone. Because we're in too big of a hurry to, you know, get on to the next new pain. So that reflection, meditation, whatever about being thankful for what we have, like, you know, a car or a bicycle or a Muni bus pass or whatever, frequent flyer miles. We're in our culture, it's culturally, we don't take time out of the day to be thankful for the positive things we have.
Yeah. That was kind of reminds me of what Panda Girl was saying just a second ago. She was talking about how if she was going to do her journaling, so Tom, I'm curious as your take on this. Do you think it is valuable? So this is a question which Joy asked earlier. Do you think that it is valuable to revisit old past hurts so that you can discharge them? Or do you think that you need to move on beyond them? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
No. I think you'll be reliving those past hurts. Dr. Sarno basically says, move on. He says, you don't have to dig. I used to say, find that black bullet in your past. He only recommends psychotherapy for, like you said earlier, for a small percentage can't overcome it on their own. But for the vast majority of people, just read his book, understand the pain is benign, and you don't have to have surgery, 80%. I figure the odds of it being TMS, I always quote, are 80%, it's TMS. So those are pretty darn good odds, you know. So just do what you want to do. Steve-O in his book, which I'm only halfway through because, but I remember one part, how painful it was for him. He got his wife, who was in a wheelchair, to
You're only halfway
on
through,
him.
Too? That's funny. It's
yeah,
a big book.
Yeah, it's like I got there, and then I started living my dynamic life that Steve-O said to do, and it doesn't mm-hmm. leave a whole lot of time for reading TMS books anymore. I got enough books to last me the rest of my life. I'm never buying another book except for the latest TMS book by his two psychotherapists or psychiatrists, which I saw is now in print. So I will get that one.
Oh, good.
In the stack there. Yeah.
That's a good book.
And I'll look at them. I will get that. But Steve-O said, he didn't say, in order for him to overcome it, he had his wife beat him, literally. He suffered great pain. But I don't have anywhere near his what he went through. And when I think about what he went through, mine is not a big deal. Hopefully I won't have to have my girlfriend beat me with a stick or
with a broom or something. Yeah, that was a pretty intense story.
That tells people, how hard this can be for some people to get through, to prove them to themselves that the pain is benign. And, read that section of his book of what you have to prove to yourself that you can overcome with what Steve, did, giving me hope that my pain is nowhere near as bad as his was.
I think that it has that effect for a lot of people. And I think that, going back to the question about discharging and reliving, I think that is a classic debate because I think that a lot of people, when they read Sarno, they say, so much of this comes from childhood, and so much of this is rage. He talks about rage, and so a lot of people will draw the conclusion that you need to go back and re-experience those old issues. I think you need to come to peace with it to some degree. When I've talked to many practitioners, they say, if you don't come to peace with it, it's going to come back and haunt you. But there is this wonderful thread as well of, get out there and live your life. That life is a joyous thing, and you want to take advantage of it. Say again.
It's like a balance.
I think it is a balance, and I
moderation.
Think yeah, when I see someone on the forum or in the chat room or anywhere in my life, what I'm looking for is: are they out of balance? Are they doing too much of one thing and not of another? But I will say that. For pain relief, I think to some degree the deep work, you do the deep work because the deep work is valuable, because you will grow and you will become a rich, you'll just have a richer life. I don't know if you necessarily have to dig up old wounds and re-experience those wounds. I don't know if that's necessary for a lot of people. I really like Alan Gordon's approach. The old experiences changed you. They created a figure inside of you, which is this inner bully. And you got to stop the inner bully. You know, if you're beating yourself up all the time, you got to stop. If you're terrifying yourself all the time, you got to stop. After that, I say enjoy your life. Happiness first, healing will follow. Is kind of the direction that I'm going into. Yeah.
What I notice about the inner bully is that it takes two to tango. I have to allow the inner bully to start this dialogue with me, and then I have to take it up. I have for every yin he says, I have to come back with a yang. And it's self-perpetuating that way, but you don't need to. You can stand with that emotion, with it next to you, and not participate in the dialogue, not buy into it. You can just let it be there.
But you need to... Sorry, tell me, when you started out, you said that you had to kind of invite it in. And why do you need to invite it in?
Because the criticism is touching on some element of your self-esteem. It's criticizing your very nature. And since it's part of you, even if it is this unconscious mind that you can't access, it's still you. So you can call a truce. You can just refuse to buy into this, where it starts criticizing you and said, no, I just won't have any of that.
Right.
I won't play ball with you, but you can just be there. You can just sit there all day long. But I'm not going to feed you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to let you build all up out of proportion.
So it's kind of interesting to me that if there's this classic dialogue of how much deep work to do, I see Bruce is kind of a deep worker, and Tom is a little bit on the less deep work side. I'm a little bit of everybody figure out their own thing, but I tend to. Someone in the comments said it sounds like I'm saying to think clean, which is a reference to Monty Hefty. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some wisdom in that for a lot of people. I've read a lot of comments of people who have said that that's really helped them. Stock Trader just jumped in the chat room and he said, I am working on the rage-soothe ratio at this stage of my healing. Is like a boxing match of anger versus happiness, with the confidence that happiness will KO anger at the end. I think that's brilliant. Rage-soothe ratio is one of my favorite. It's just like two little paragraphs in the book, but I love the rage-soothe ratio. I think because it's kind of capturing what Tom was saying, what Steve was saying, all of these good ideas about getting out there and living your life and not letting it hold you down. And I have to say, I'm glad that we're going a little bit later because I'm absolutely loving this conversation. I think as we make this podcast, the key is always to recognize that everyone who's on the line, we're talking to share ideas. We're going to put a resource up and hopefully many people will listen to it. So we always, we can share different ideas respectfully and recognize that different people will have different opinions. But I'm curious, Tom, what do you think about what's been said so far? I'm curious.
It's fun. I mean, I'm looking at the fuse meeting thing. My red flag is up. And next time I'm going to, get my camera going, figure out how to get it on.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Do you have to wear clothes on here if you're on the camera?
You only have to have something on your shoulder. I'm actually completely naked below my... No, I'm joking. Yeah. just so I didn't scare you. I do indeed have pants on. But clothes are... As long as I don't know about it, Tom, you can wear whatever you want. You can wear a chicken suit. And as long as I can't see it...
I'll have my girlfriend here, too. I think this is pretty cool is what I think. What I was thinking about while you were asking me that was, our culture is creating the TMS. We are blessed with a very wealthy material culture. There are so many things to do. There's too many things, too many choices. And see, I've chosen, I'm 65, I've chosen tennis and cars, and that's about it. Because I think you got to find a passion. What I'm finding with TMS people is a lot of them don't know if they didn't have their pain. I don't think they know
what would you do
if you didn't have your pain. What would you like to be doing? You know,
yeah.
And a lot of them I don't think know. And maybe that's part of the pain. If they knew what they wanted to do, get passionate about, like, you know, if you get good at one thing, how you do something is how you do everything. And we have too many things. Real quickly, there's a great line in that movie, Girl Interrupted. I think it's the shoplifter girl, Winona, and Vanessa Redgrave. She doesn't belong in there. Her parents sent her in there because whatever, she's shopping, whatever. And Vanessa says, you know, you're not crazy. Your problem is you're ambivalent. You don't know what you want, basically. And I think that's a problem with a lot of TMSers. They're ambivalent about what do they want out of life. And if they found what they want, get passionate about and just do it, their pain would disappear because they would have a good distraction and to distract them from the bad distraction.
Yeah.
Well, I think what Peter Zaffirides says about TMS occurring at those points in life where there are existential questions that have to be answered. And rather than answer them, things like death, alienation, rather than confronting those things, you come up with this symptomology, this pain symptomology, because it prevents you from dealing with these ultimate things that are hard to face, that are difficult to face, especially if you're going through a bout of low self-esteem following a economic crisis, a family crisis, a divorce, a death in the family. That's what primes it. I realize just now that if you have high self-esteem, do you really care about rage? Do you really care about self-pity? Do you feel about sorrow? All of those things are in their place in balance, Ben, if you are together in yourself. And then that enemy doesn't come up next to you either and start nagging at you, trying to engage you in a self-depreciating dialogue. How can he come in? How can the bully come in if you feel good about yourself? Just get out of here, you know?
Right. You step over them like they were doo-doo, and they, I don't want to slow down for this, and I don't want to engage in this. I want to get on with what I want to be doing, let me bypass this this character or whatever.
Yeah, you're living. You're really doing it.
Yeah.
You aren't in this ambivalent existential crisis state.
And I kind of wonder, though, I mean, when we talk about people having too many choices and being ambivalent, do you think that that's something that we, in some sense, do we decide to do that? Do you think that there is, because it seems like we should be able to have a lot of choices and just blow them off and just say, okay, this is good enough. I'm going to I could choose the chocolate or the vanilla, I'm going to go with the chocolate. And,
it's our culture. We are living in this time of the most incredible material civilization on the planet, and we're bombarded by advertisements for everything and seeing all this stuff, and you got to do everything. And that, I guess after you get to my age, you realize, I'm never going to do all that. So you choose a couple of things you really like and kind of ignore the rest. And I just watch Tennis Channel and Northern News, and we watch a little Voice and stuff like that, kind of entertainment, and avoid all violent shows, and haven't watched a news program in ages or read a newspaper. Just avoid all that bad news and find out what you want to watch.
Life is yours to live it. The stock trader in the chat room, tmswiki.org/chat, just said, TMS has introduced me to a world of psychology and mindfulness. I am now implementing mindfulness with stock trading. I think that is brilliant. I can't tell you how many people interested in TMS are interested in mindfulness. Andrew Miller is the most recent one to talk about it. He said he is a TMSer himself. He said in a recent post, "Oh, and I'd like to include one other piece. I'd highly encourage everyone to check out some form of mindfulness practice to include in their lives. Meditation has been an integral part of my life since discovering TMS. I find that it goes a long way in separating myself from the internal dialogue of self-judgment that comes with the personality closely associated with TMS." And I think that makes sense. I've been rereading Healing Back, or listening actually to the CDs of Healing Back Pain, because they're so good and because they really are the foundation. And I remember Dr. Sarno said that he was amazed at how prevalent low self-esteem was in our culture. And I guess when I hear Tom talking about, you know, the world and all the advertising that we're faced with and all these other features that we have to deal with, you know, it feels like that is a significant source of self-esteem. And I guess from what Andrew is saying is that if you can be mindful of the self-dialogue, then you can beat it. But then there is this classic technique, which I'm hearing more from Tom, which I love and I think is great. If you can do this, the absolute best thing to do is just get out there and play tennis. You know, get out there, find something that you love. For me, it's this website. It's, you know, it's running these podcasts. It's doing this stuff. I'm not going to lie. I do get tired, and sometimes I wonder, you know, like, will it ever get big enough to kind of doing it on its own? But I have to say, I love it. It is, you know, the most wonderful thing in my life. And so, yeah, just find something that you love and dive into it.
Yeah, get passionate about it. And get tired. When you get tired, go to sleep, you know, or turn on Howard Stern, you know, a TMS hero, and, you know, and say, God, I'm tired, I can't do anything. You just fall asleep, you know, thinking about good stuff. Yeah. When I used to have trouble going to sleep, and I realized I would start reviewing my tennis lessons that I got, and, man, bam, I was out like a light within, like, a few seconds. I was thinking about tennis, and I was gone. I had no insomnia problem at all. Think about something you like, and you'll just nod off.
That's so funny. It's always interesting to hear the resonances between different things. Panda Girl, who was on here before, was just talking about how she made sure to write about the things that she was grateful for before bed. A stock trader mentioned another really common theme, which I hear all the time in the chat room. He says, noticing, accepting, and letting go will always be a tool for me for my lifetime. When I was talking about the balance between deep work and just getting out there and enjoying life, the thing which I always think about is, you know, you do some of the deep work because you enjoy it, because it makes your life more meaningful. If you want to do the deep work, do the deep work. You'll live a happier life. But I am a believer, a strong believer, that if you want to feel less pain, play tennis because you enjoy it. I'm just using that as an example. If you want to feel less pain, make a website because you enjoy it. You know, kiss your girlfriend because you enjoy it. Do whatever it is that floats your boat.
Yeah. Yeah, cheers.
Cheers to that. Shall we wrap up our little marathon podcast here? Tom, I hope you'll come back and join us next week.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. And I thought Bruce was Alan Gordon, I think. Now I see his picture there, so I got confused.
Never to be confused.
It is their sagely voice.
You were very convincing. I thought you were Alan Gordon for the first half hour. That's why I came up with those questions about lobotomy.
Oh, no.
And you make a good Alan Gordon.
There you go.
Well, I just was quoting something that Alan said. Now he's.
Well, you might be a good understudy or body double.
Well, he really does these things. I just aimlessly philosophize about them.
Bruce is our scholar, I think. He is the one who, when we're reading a book, like when we were reading that recent book by Fran Anderson and Eric Sherman, Pathways to Pain Relief, he was the one who gave us the chapter summaries, and always very well done. So maybe that's what you were picking up on. Anyway, we should wrap up, and I'll see everyone next week.
Okay,
cool.
Good enough.
Thank you for it.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Talk to you later.
We're still going on with Alan.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do two sections or three sections, Bruce? Anyone in the chat room, feel free to chime in as well.
Yeah, well, I thought that method you had this time of giving the section of Alan Gordon's lesson plan and then giving various links to strings on the forum that correlated to them, to Alan's theory or Alan's practice. I thought that was good because then you could see how one reinforced the other.
Right. So I can see two possibilities here. One we could do, he talks about generate self-compassion, recognize destructive behaviors, and identify the source of abuse. Those are kind of, there's a little bit of present and past in there, but it's kind of deep work. You could also talk about mindfulness. That's section 3.4, and with Andrew Miller recently suggesting mindfulness, we could do that. I think either of them would work well. Likewise to you, Joy. A joyful toast to you and yours, to you as well.
When you say mindfulness, do you mean like being attentive and watchful and observant? Is that what you mean by mindfulness?
So mindfulness is it's a way of carrying of boy, wow, how does one describe it? It starts with meditation, where you just try to, for 10 minutes or 20 minutes or half an hour, you try to be aware of everything that you're feeling. You're mindful. And it's a practice, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And it's been studied very extensively in the last 20 years. And it changes your brain. They can see it on brain scans. But one way to be mindful is just to listen to your breath and just to focus on the sensations involved in your breath for 10 minutes. You can have body scans. You can also just be mindful of your thoughts as they come in and go out. But usually when a thought comes in, you try and let it go.
So or inhale, exhale, quiet the mind.
Yeah.
Listen to the silence.
Yeah.
Okay.
The way that Howard Schubner does it in his mindfulness meditation on the CD that's enclosed in the jacket of Unlearn Your Pain is to have you first concentrate on and listen to your breath and let it be. Kind of, what is that three parts you were listing? Pay attention to it and not hold on to it, that sort of thing. And then he shifts in the middle of the meditation to going through the different parts of your body in synchronization with your breath and feeling your feet, feeling your lower legs, your upper legs, your abdomen, your lower back, your shoulders, your neck, your head, your eyes. And then for the third part, he goes through a meditational sequence where you focus on the breath at the same time you focus on thoughts and feelings. You just let them go by without interacting with them. Sort of like what I was saying about the inner bully.
Like just a guided exercise?
Yeah, like a guided exercise. And then you come back to the breath at the end. So it forms a cycle. It's about a 10-minute exercise.
Feel your breath.
Yeah, starts with the breath, ends with the breath, goes through the body parts, consciousness, feeling in your body, and then on to letting your emotions and thoughts go by without holding on to them,
okay,
without being attached, and realizing that they're not real unless you let them be real. I think that's the lesson.
And allow the deep feelings to flow.
Yeah, well, also, so these, you're not taking thoughts and feelings so seriously as if they are real.
I get it.
Yeah.
Mindfulness, I think, is Alan has a terrific metaphor for mindfulness. If an emotion is like a train, when mindfulness, you allow the emotions to come into you like a train pulling into a station, but you don't have to get on the train. You don't have to let the emotion take you away. You can watch the train just glide on by. And you're
listening to what's inside of you.
But not, yes, exactly. And not letting it take you over, just being aware and knowing right now I'm angry, right now I'm sad, right now I'm tense.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you get on the train and follow it to its ultimate destination, the destination, the name of that city is madness. Isn't it? That's what happens when a psychotic just takes off on one obsessive idea and just acts out.
Yeah.
As if it's real. As if it's not an idea or a feeling.
Yeah. I think most of us know how to get off the train. We just automatically get off the train. But if you never did, it wouldn't be a good scene.
Well, there are people who seem to ride that train through episode after episode.
Yes, indeed.
And it must feel good to them, too, when they do it. It must feel all right, like it has some kind of internal logic that's working itself out until they wind up in the courtroom.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, we should probably wrap up. So do you want to do which do people think? Should we do the first three sections of part two, or should we do mindfulness? People have a thought on that? You know, let's be a little bit flexible like we were before, and say that officially, do you want to do mindfulness? What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
Okay, so we'll do mindfulness next week. If people want to talk about other stuff, that's great. If not, we'll kind of kick this off. I hope, I was kind of sad that we missed Chicken Bone, but we will, maybe she'll come back next week and we can revisit some of these feeling your feelings ideas.
Yeah, this mindfulness, maybe for us, you could find a few links in the forum where there are relevant strings.
Oh, yes.
Apply to that.
She's busy.
Just another little assignment.
I know. You realize you have a goodist in front of you. I am. I think that does make sense. I will find links. I might find links. We will see.
We'll see.
Whether I find links or not. Anyone else, of course, is welcome to find links as well.
I'll tell you if I find some.
As per their preference. Stock Trader has already given us one. As Joy says, may the blessings multiply your way. Thank you all for joining us. And warmest thanks to you as well, Joy. And see you next week.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye, Al.
Stay well. Bye.